Thank you. I got a little bit ahead of myself wanting to get up here last time around. There's two aspects of my talk that I want to elaborate on before we start looking at the projects that we've had. I've never presented it to this audience before, so I apologize if many of you are familiar with this. But when I'm talking about Central Oregon, basically referring to this part of the state right in here, where we're right up close to the Cascade Mountain Range. Oregon is not the wet place that it's often characterized to be. Basically, you've got forest all over here on the western part of the state along the Pacific coast. There's a valley here. This is called the Willamette Valley. Rainfall from the crest of the Cascades to the coast is probably going to range anywhere from 40 to 100 inches annually. And then once you get over into our part of the state on the east side of the Cascades, it's much drier. In Central Oregon, we get anywhere from 8 to 10 inches of precipitation annually. So moving on to carrot seed production in that area, there's 2,000 to 3,000 acres produced annually in an irrigation district that's 55,000 acres. The annual gross value of that crop is $10 to $15 million. And we have almost exclusively hybrid carrot cultivars being produced for seed. Very little open pollinated production of this crop now. One of the factors that's driving the production of hybrid rather than OP carrots is that the seed that's harvested from fields in Central Oregon tends to have a very high germination rate. And you can see in this this picture on the bottom, our planting scheme here is typically four rows of male sterile with two rows of pollinators and then a blank row between those. There's two common production schemes that are employed for carrot seed production. There's the first that, and the one that we'll focus on the most for the talk, is seed-to-seed production. Basically, for seed-to-seed production, you have seed that's planted in August. It overwinters as a small rosette. It'll bolt in June and bloom in July and August, and then we're harvesting seed in September or October, so you've got essentially a 13 to 14 month crop. Alternately, we also have root to seed production. It's also called steckling production, where you have roots harvested from some warmer part of the world, typically Arizona. Those roots will be harvested in February. They're put in cold storage to induce vernalization, and then they're shipped to Central Oregon, and we transplant those usually in April, about the time we're getting irrigation water in. There's a number of cultural production challenges for seed-to-seed carrots, dealing with some of the adversities we can face in the winter. Obviously, you want an environment that's cold enough to induce vernalization, but not so cold that you kill everything. We don't always get exactly what we order, so we got to work with what we have. About 75% of that 2,000 to 3,000 acres is seed-to-seed production. And obviously, you've got a much higher risk of winter mortality with seed-to-seed production compared to root-to-seed. That winter mortality can exhibit itself in two main ways. One is, the main way is frost heaving, wherein, you know, say February, we get a lot of freezing and thawing on at the soil surface, and the soil is very moist, so it, the sheer physics of it just pushes those carrot roots right up out of the ground. That's a little bit different than just getting a good hard freeze in the middle of the winter and things dying from that. If you look closely at this picture, hopefully you can see this. I'll help you guide you through it. This picture was taken in February last year. This is an exposed carrot root that wasn't there. It wasn't poking up out of the ground like that when that plant went into the winter. And you can see that the top is just starting to melt down, essentially. It's being exposed to to cold temperatures. They can heave up out of the ground a good half inch under conditions that are favorable for it. Another cultural challenge that we have is that our growing season is very short, and many growers are growing carrot seed in rotation with winter or spring wheat, and to get that wheat crop harvested and then get a seed bed ready to go to plant a small seeded crop like carrots is a huge logistical challenge often. And that challenge is driving interest in no-till and reduced-till systems for many of the growers. The strategies that are employed for winter protection of seed-to-seed carrots are mostly cultural. The way growers structure their beds, the way that they'll manage the residue from the previous crop, and there's various row cover methods. I wish I had a better picture to show you, but the industry standard is something that's called agribond paper. It's a paper that's permeable to moisture. It can be kind of reused. If you look at this picture, you're seeing right here up in this corner and in this corner, there's the two pollinator rows, the two male rows are covered with paper there. And then there's four female rows here that are part of a trial that I'll talk about in a little bit. That paper is typically installed in October or November, and then it's uninstalled in March or April. The advantages of the agribond paper are that it works really well for protecting the carrots through the winter. The disadvantages are that it's a big pain in the neck to deal with, very labor intensive, and allows a lot of pest proliferation underneath. In the past, we have used spent mint hay, which was a byproduct from peppermint distillation in the area. It used to be widely available. It was a fragile plant residue. That's what I'm holding in this picture here. The only problem we had with it was difficult to apply, but you didn't have to worry about taking it back out of the field. It just stayed out there and decomposed, and in the spring you had no problems. This picture that I'm showing you here is a row of carrots that's covered with with spent mint hay. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of peppermint production in the area, and this biomass material is no longer widely available as an alternative to paper. But there's a lot of other things that you can use other than spent mint hay, so that's the first project that I want to talk to you about. Our objective was to compare different row covers for winter protection. I conducted this trial at two locations with four reps. Treatments were applied in October. The data collection consisted of stand counts of the carrots before any treatments were applied, and then in the spring we went back out, and if there was any row cover left, we just pushed it out of the way and counted the exact same part of row and count the winter survival. Treatments were applied in a 4-inch band. We had an untreated check. One that was my harebrained idea, and I'll tell you right now that didn't work very well, was to use hydro mulch. You may be familiar with hydro mulch. They use it in revegetation projects on roadsides. They spray it out, and they put seed and some kind of like chopped newspaper or chopped shredded wood product in the water. I thought it would work well because you could spray it on rather than having to grind up a dry material and drop it evenly. We didn't, of course, put any seed in with this. It was just water and the hydro mulch. I also was able to get some wood mulch, which is essentially just available locally. It was a chipped wood material. I was able to get some spent mint hay and use that as a comparison, as like a standard. And then we had agribond paper as another standard. I'm going to present I've got two data slides here I want to show you. These are different locations, and the seedbed prep in the two locations was very different. So this site is near Culver. You're looking at the carrot stand counts on a 40-foot row. The gray bar would be the pre-count, And the blue bar is the spring count, the post count. And you can see we've got variability from treatment to treatment, but don't get hung up on that because that's just that was just natural variability in the field, you know, because the pre-counts are low here. The thing that you really want to look at in this slide is the difference between the gray bar and the blue bar for each treatment, and it's essentially nothing. There was no differences here. We had very similar stand counts. Now this field, I mentioned that the two sites were different. This site was rotated out of Kentucky bluegrass. The seed bed was left very cloddy, and there was a lot of residue, residue from the previous crop there. And I think that really made a big difference in the survival of the carrots. And the growers know this. The growers know that a cloddy seed bed with residue is a good thing to protect those carrots. Now this is the other site. This is near Madras. This site was rotated out of wheat, but the wheat straw had been burned. So there's very little crop residue left over. By the time they were done irrigating in October, the soil surface was pretty smooth and tight, which is not good for getting these carrots through the winter. And you can see here that these, particularly with the check here, we've got a huge difference between the gray bar and the blue bar. So that represents the mortality we had over the winter. The orange line I put in on this chart is showing you just the percent change between those two. Now the analysis turned out pretty clean on this data. Essentially there were three groups. If I can get the cursor to work here. You had the check had more winter mortality than the hydromulch, and the hydromulch had more mortality than all three of these treatments. The wood mulch, the mint hay, and the agribond paper were all the same. Conclusions from that, this was not earth-shattering news, but the different seedbed prep between locations influenced winter survival. But the interesting thing that I've been able to demonstrate talked with growers about is this, with this data, is that in that cloddy, high-residue situation, there was essentially no need for any kind of a row cover. Now, not all varieties are equally tolerant to the winter, and so I'm not saying that you should throw your insurance policy out the window, because you never know what winter is going to bring. That the smooth soil surface site near Madras, the hydromulch was not as effective as the others. It was also not practical to apply that treatment. We ended up needing way too much water to put that material on effectively. So I see that as being a dead end. But I think one of the strongest conclusions that we pulled out of this is that it doesn't matter if you don't have spent mint hay. There's lots of other cheap biomass around that you can put on, and I don't think it matters much whether it's wheat straw or wood mulch or mint hay. As long as you've got about a quarter inch of mulch to cover the crowns of those carrots, you really help protect them a lot when the frost heaving season begins. Just real quickly, I want to try to get through this other project. I don't know when else I'm going to have a chance to present data like this. So we often have poor seedling carrot growth after wheat, and it's kind of a black box phenomenon. We have lots of various vague explanations like nematodes, herbicide carryover, and or allelopathy from the wheat straw. And we've, over the years, tried to do some work to pin this down. I did another project to try to do this. We did it across 2 years, had four reps and two factors. We had five herbicide treatments for one factor, and then we had three different seed beds as the other factor. Now, I don't want to get into the herbicide data, but the thing that was really interesting to me about this is to look at the difference. Again, we're looking at carrot stand counts here, and the gray bar, this gray bar, and this dark blue bar are the first year of the study, so you're seeing the stand mortality here between fall and spring. And again, this is the second year of the study, so this is the fall, and this is the spring. Look at how much higher the stand counts tend to be in the December 08 bar and the December 10 bar for this no-till situation. There's other reasons why growers haven't strongly adopted no-till in our area, but I think there's going to be some interest in going that way. There's just some pictures to see what the difference in those plots looked like in the spring. Of course, you can see a little bit of the crown of that carrot exposed there. That's not what we want to have going on. We want to have this nice insulative layer. I think I already made my conclusions. The no-till seed bed showed good carrot survival, but there were numerous herbivorous pests that we're going to have to deal with if we go down that road. Future direction, I think probably going to do some more work on row covers, but use like a pelletized wheat straw. The nice thing about something that's pelletized is you can run it through a drop spreader and not have it get hung up. Also probably going to look at influence of wheat variety on seedling carrot vigor. I'm probably out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Time for a quick question. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think what you learned here would translate to other carrot seed production areas, like in Washington near the Pasco area?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think they have, the soil texture is different. Obviously, we've got a real ashy, more of a loamy soil. They've got just pretty much blow sand there, but it seems like it could translate. Yes?
Do you see a difference in the xanthomonas pressure depending on the different treatments you use?
That's a really good question, and we didn't really make observations on that. The pathologist and I looked at the plots, and we decided that in the future that we'd like to do that, but we didn't have a good way to maintain this study through to that part of the season to when you'd really start to see xanthomonas. Okay, yep.
How typical were the winters that you conducted these studies? Because the winter season obviously could have a huge impact on mm-hmm. your results.
Yeah, that's a good question. The row cover study was all done in one winter. It was two locations, one winter. And it was actually, there was a pretty good deal of carrot mortality in the irrigation district that winter. So it seems like it was a good year to have that trial out. And then that also correlates with the first year of the second study that I talked about, the seed bed study. And so we had... I think the answer is it's fairly typical. Yes?
You said that cloddy soils favor better winter survivability, but doesn't that create some establishment issues with a small seeded crop like carrot?
You know, you would think that, and I'm sure that anybody that's worked in fresh market carrot production, they don't want clods, they want a nice tight seed bed, but we just really don't see that. With after bluegrass, you know, after wheat, I'm not, you know, people that are going in out, growers that are going in after wheat, they're not leaving it nearly as rough as they do after bluegrass. So I think that there's structural differences. I went over my time.
Yeah, yep. That's all right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. We have a business meeting, which we want to start in about maybe 2 or 3 minutes. So, but before we do that, I want to alert you to a couple of things real quick. One is that there is a poster session. Session 71 will take place between 4 and 6 o'clock this afternoon. And so there are a number of C4 related posters there. I think it's posters 202 to 203 to 206. Yeah. Then tomorrow. Tomorrow, we have a symposium entitled Use of Seed Treatments to Mitigate Abiotic Stress Risks and Growth Limiting Factors 1. And then we have a second stage in the afternoon. So they are sessions 195 and 196. The first session is going to start tomorrow at 10 o'clock in room 308, which if you haven't found the seaside area yet, that takes a little work. So plan ahead. And then in the same room that afternoon, starting at 1:10, there will be a continuation of that discussion. All right, with that, let's thank our speakers one more time.